Radio Prague News.
Friday marks the 70th anniversary of the bombing of Plzeň by British aircraft. Czech Roma Petr Torák, who serves as officer for the British police, will receive the Order of the British Empire. And Czech ice hockey legend Jaroslav Holík has died at the age of 72. Friday is the 70th anniversary of the bombing of a railway marshalling yard in Plzeň by British aircraft. Some 624 people were killed in the attack on the 17th of April 1945, though some estimates suggest that the real figure was 850. Alongside the rail yard, factories and around 120 houses were hit in the bombing raid. It was the heaviest and most deadly attack on the West Bohemian city in the course of the Second World War. Czech Roma Petr Torák, who serves as officer for the British police in Cambridgeshire, will receive the Order of the British Empire in May. Queen Elizabeth II has decided to award the officer for his service for the Roma community. Petr Torák has lived in Britain since 1999, when he left the Czech Republic following several racist attacks on him and his family members. He is involved in a number of projects supporting the Roma community and is one of the founders of the Gypsy Roma Traveller Police Association. The head of the Office of the President, Chancellor Vratislav Mynář, has a monthly salary of 120,000 crowns. Mr. Mynář revealed the information in an interview for the Daily Deník. The Chancellor said he will publish his salary and that of all the senior office employees on his website on Monday, since he received a permission to do so from the Office for the Protection of Private Data. Mr. Mynář has recently raised speculation over the purchase of a villa at a surprisingly low cost from a controversial Prague businessman who is now in prison for a hit-and-run incident. Aneta Langerová was named the Best Female Singer of the Year at the Czech Music Industry's annual Anděl Award ceremony on Thursday night, also winning the award for the Best Album, Best Song and Best Music Video Award. Michal Hruza took the Best Male Singer of the Year title and the band Činasky was named Band of the Year. Singer Hanna Zagorová, who was popular mainly in the 1970s and 80s, was inducted into the Czech Music Hall of Fame. Czech tennis player Lucie Šafářová will be the first from the national women's squad to take the court at the weekend in the Fed Cup semi-finals against France. The Czech world number 13 will face Caroline Garcia in their singles match at Ostrava's Chess Arena. The second match of the day will see double Wimbledon champion and world number 4 Petra Kvitová against Kristina Mladenovic. The Czech women's tennis team have advanced to the semi-finals of the Fed Cup for the seventh time in a row. Czech ice hockey legend Jaroslav Holík, who helped Czechoslovakia win a hockey world title and an Olympic bronze medal, has died at the age of 72. The forward scored 57 goals for Czechoslovakia in his 142 international games. He also led his country's under-20 team to world titles in 2000 and 2001 as a coach. The Czech Ice Hockey Federation made the announcement on Friday, saying that he died after battling an unspecified long-term illness. My name is Ruth Franková and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, Queen Elizabeth is to present a high state honour to a Czech Romani police officer in the UK. We'll have a roundup of this week's Czech business news, and later we speak to a successful Czech games developer. All that's coming up in today's programme. Petr Torák, a Czech Roma who moved to the UK in 1999, is to be honoured with an OBE for his outstanding work as a police officer. Torák was targeted by neo-Nazis in the Czech Republic, but in England he's been making headlines for many years for his commitment to public service. Dominic Yoon reports.
As far back as 2008, the UK press was hailing Petr Torák, a young Roma refugee, as the new face of British policing. By age 27, he was serving as a community support officer in the city of Peterborough, but in 2006 graduated to become a fully-fledged police officer. He speaks five languages and has been applauded for his skills in dealing with migrants, an issue that took on a fresh dimension in Britain following the eastward expansion of the EU in 2004 and again in 2007. Born in the Czech city of Liberec, Torák says he experienced countless racist physical attacks in his native country. He moved to the UK in 1999 and found a job in the fast food industry, but the young Roma soon set out to fulfill a lifelong dream of active community service. Torák spoke to Radio Prague's Rosie Johnson back in 2008, describing his work as a UK police officer.
Yes, most of my time I spent working with the newcomers from the Eastern Europe, from Czech, Poland, Portugal. Not only because I'm from the Czech Republic, but also because I know the languages of most of these countries. So, yeah, and also because I can do it good, because, you know, I can interact with them, I understand their culture, so that's why I work with them a lot.
Torák has also set up the Gypsy Roma Traveller Police Association in Britain, a roughly 50-strong group battling to overcome perceptions, as common in Britain as in the Czech Republic, that Roma are associated with crime and theft. The officer's exemplary skills and commitment in fostering community relations across ethnic and cultural boundaries have now brought him to the attention of the Queen, who is set to reward the Czech Roma officer with an OBE. Speaking to Czech Radio on Friday, Petr Torák said he was deeply honoured to be receiving this award. Torák partly credited an effort by the UK police force to recruit officers from all ethnic backgrounds for his stellar rise, and he also praised UK culture for being largely blind to the colour of a person's skin. The officer, who has now established a family in Britain, also added that he has no plans at present to return to the Czech Republic.
That report was by Dominic Yoon. And now it's time for a roundup of this week's Czech business news, for which I'm joined by Jan Wellinger.
Financial assets of Czech households grew by 6% annually on average in the previous 5 years and reached the equivalent of $194 billion in 2014. This according to the Global Wealth Report by the Boston Consulting Group, which was released earlier this week. The study ranks 63 countries. Among the financial assets included in the study for the Czech Republic were cash, bank deposits, mutual funds, shares, and pension and life insurance. 5% of the richest Czechs own 45% of the total financial wealth. That compares to 48% in Poland, 52% in Germany, and 77% in the United States. Assets worth over $100,000 are owned by 200,000 Czech households. That is around 5%, and some 10,000 Czech households are dollar millionaires.
More than 60 Czech firms are gearing up for a technology trade fair to be held in Shanghai, China next week. In all, some 900 exhibitors are taking part. The Czech Republic is the main international partner, meaning Czech companies should benefit with regards to the most advantage and most prestigious floor space. Yaroslav Tvrdík, the head of the Czech-Chinese Chamber of Commerce, said that China was interested in automobile and plane manufacture, engineering products, as well as biotech and nanotechnology.
A confidence survey conducted by the Czech-German Chamber of Commerce suggests that a vast majority of German firms investing in the country would pick the Czech Republic again. According to results released by the Chamber this week, 92% investing companies replied in the affirmative. Two-thirds of the companies assessed the current economic situation in the Czech Republic as satisfactory, and 29% replied it was in good shape, almost double the number of firms compared with last year's survey. The number of companies describing the current economic situation as poor dropped to 7%. The figure last fell below the 10% mark in 2008. Previously, almost 20% of the respondents assessed the situation as bad.
The Czech Industry and Trade Ministry announced this week it had prepared a new proposal for renewed mining of metals, including gold. Industry and Trade Minister Jan Mladek made the announcement this week. The town of Zlaté Hory in the Jeseníky mountain range is one area where mining could be renewed, Mr. Mladek told journalists. The town's mayor, Milan Rats, said the renewed activity would help the district, which suffers from 11% unemployment. The state-run company Diamo has been commissioned to work out a feasibility study on gold mining in the area.
The authorities have uncovered more than 10 tons of poultry from neighbouring Poland containing salmonella bacteria. According to the spokesman for the State Veterinary Administration, the tainted meat from the same supplier made its way to shelves at three locations: Lone, Baszkana near Friedek-Mistek, and Sadzka near Nymburk. The authorities ordered the immediate removal of deep frozen boneless chicken by the distribution firm. The company could face up to 1 million crowns fine.
In the final part of our program, Jan Wellinger meets games designer Jakub Dvorsky. That's in this edition of The Arts.
Amanete Design is the independent Czech game studio behind the point-and-click adventure games Machinarium and Botanicula. With beautifully hand-drawn backgrounds and richly designed worlds, the games put players in the shoes of protagonists such as a broken robot or a group of unusual creatures who have to face dark forces. Both titles have proven very successful. Recently, I caught up with Jakub Dvorsky, and he's the man behind Amanete Design, and asked him not only about the games, but how he started the company.
Actually, I founded Amanete Design as a graphic design studio, just for myself, just as a brand for myself. And I was, at that time, I was graphic designer and animator and illustrator. But in the past, I created a few computer games. In 2003, at the time when I was finishing Academy of Art in Prague, and my thesis work at the school was short computer game called Samorost. And because it was so successful and popular all around the world, I decided I will continue trying making small games, and I'm still doing it.
So there were several games before Machinarium. In what ways, in terms of design principles or even game principles, did they set the ground for the later title?
I was always into adventure games, into this kind of genre, which I'm taking freely, I would say. They are not typical point-and-click adventure games, but they are definitely adventure games. And I'm still trying to evolve this genre to directions which I like. But I'm still working on this kind of genre.
Mm-hmm. One of the nice things about the game is that at the beginning there's a set of instructions, basically a couple sentences, maybe even one sentence, and that's it. Is it your aim, on the one hand, to keep it simple, but also on the other hand, to leave absolutely discovery up to the player?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, I don't like dialogues, and I don't like tutorials. I hate them, actually. So I want the player is able to play the game and experience the game right from the beginning. I don't want to teach him anything because it's so simple and easy, so everyone find out what to do and what is it about.
Some scenes are simpler than others because obviously there are processes on some of the screens which are quite complex. You have to do A before you can do B, B before you can do C. Did you like doing, for example, puzzles or that kind of thing as well as adventure games, sort of logical puzzles?
I like logical puzzles, so I try to integrate it into the game somehow, but not into every game. For example, Samorosts are easier and not so full of these kind of logical puzzles. And we are currently working on a new Samorost game, which won't be terribly easy, but also not as hard and logical as Machinarium, for example. So it always matters on the topic of the game and if it fits there or not.
In Machinarium, you created a very specific science fiction world. It's very, very detailed artistically. There are also numerous, it seems to me, references, historical. Some of the clocks could be reminiscent of Prague's historical clock or the Jewish town, that kind of thing. Bring me into the process a little bit. When you were putting together this world and designing it, How deep do you have to go?
It's a difficult question. We wanted to create a really detailed and warm world which feels pleasant and not cold and boring, like you would imagine world inhabited only by robots. So even the robots are rusty and not so nice and polished. And the houses as well, we are living here in Prague and other cities in Czech Republic, which are quite often destroyed. The houses are old and destroyed a bit and moldy and stuff. And we like this, all this stuff. So we love these kind of details, little details, not only details in the design of architecture itself, but also the state of decay of these buildings, for example, is interesting. And if some old human-made machine is somehow rotten and destroyed a bit, it's starting to be more interesting for us, or at least for me, than it used to be when it was new. So we are trying to put all this stuff into it, and for it we not only draw the game very detailed, but we also take a lot of pictures of textures in the real world and put it there to the illustrations.
And of course it's also filled in by very specific sound effects, music as well, to color the whole experience. When we played it, I remember you would be doing something in the foreground of the tableau, doing an exercise or trying to solve a puzzle. And in the background, there would be a big ballooned building, a bloated building with little lights on. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help but wonder and sort of wish that I could see what was going on in other parts of the world as well. Which, for me, there was a quote like that, I think, by, I don't know which film director, it might have been Kurosawa, that life continues beyond the frame.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what we are trying to achieve as well. The world is really believable and tangible, and somehow you can trust that it exists somewhere and it has a deeper story than what you can experience in the game. And actually we know much more about the game's world than it's in the game itself. We know several side stories, how it was built, for example. When you have these informations in your head, then it's much easier to design it and to think about it when you are designing it.
So the film equivalent would be a kind of backstory or even a bio of the different characters, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if I understand correctly, we don't learn the robot's name in the game.
No. His name is Josef, but it's not anywhere in the game because there are no words.
What kind of character, since we've touched upon him, is Josef? Obviously, we control him, his actions. He does have a bit of his own, I guess, self-determination. There are points in the story where he does what he's meant to do.
Mm.
Or the story has scripted elements like the umbrella that blows away when he crosses a bridge. That always happens. How would you define him in terms of what he represents?
I would say not only him, but also other our characters, I mean main characters in other games, are kind of neutral. Obviously they are nice and they are not evil at all, and they have a sense of humor and such things, but they don't have any strong character, so you can project your own personality into the main character, and that's what we want. So every player, no matter who it is, can project himself into the main hero in the game.
At the same time, the way he's graphically designed or some of the other characters are designed, he does evoke the little guy, though, especially since he's, say, facing an enormous task, because one thing that is consistent between this and Botanicula is that there are the good guys and then there's an evil side.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he's little, he's definitely weak, but he's smart and he has wits, so he can manage things. Something like Bilbo in The Hobbit and such characters.
What age group actually was or were these games designed for? For adults, for children, for both?
For us. That's our only criteria. We are designing it and making the games for us so we can like it and be proud of it. And surprisingly, it works really well with small children. When we started, we didn't know anything about small children. Now, many of us already has our own children. Mm-hmm. But it works since the beginning for little kids, for older people who never played any games, but even for hardcore gamers who otherwise love shooters and violent games, but they often like to play our games, for example, with their girlfriends.
One of the elements that you included in Machinarium is a kind of a help book if you get stuck on a particular level and you don't know what to do. That wasn't included in Botanicula. In fact, if I was to compare them, I would say that there's something about Botanicula, while more familiar, because it's a much more organic world. It's basically inside living organisms, trees, and that kind of thing. Even though that's more recognizable, the creatures themselves are a little bit alien.
Yeah, there are.
And it seemed to me that you're less certain how to move forward from the beginning, that there's more time to get used to the setting and to sort of figure out that there are similar kinds of problems.
We felt that it's not really important that much in Botanicula because it's easier. There are not as many logical puzzles and definitely not as hard as in Machinarium. But also it's a game based more on exploration itself. It doesn't really matter if you are progressing quickly or not. You should just explore and click on everything and see what's happened. And even the wrong solutions are fun. So we want players to explore all the solutions, even the wrong ones. So that's why we didn't include help book. Both games are completely linear, but Machinarium feels a bit more linear, more story-driven maybe, while Botanicula is more about exploration of the tree and about the nature and collecting all those creatures you meet along the way.
I wanted to ask you about collecting. A lot of us have a collecting gene. Is that part of the enjoyment? Because you get these electronic cards for every creature you meet. It's almost like a biologist taking note.
Yeah, we know that especially guys are very often into collecting stuff. And there's 123 creatures or cards you can collect, but only one of 1,000 people is able to collect all of them. And that's challenging. The game itself isn't challenging because it's kind of simple and easy to finish, but it's quite a tough challenge to collect all these cards.
We found the representation of evil, though, to be quite a bit darker in Botanicula than the robot sort of gang, even though you have those guys wanting to blow up the city on the one hand, but here it was much more alien, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, there's definitely a bigger contrast in Botanicula. The game from the beginning looks much more cheerful and colorful and happier than the bleak world of Machinarium. But in the end, it's kind of dark, psycho thing. Botanicula was designed by Jara Plachy. He's the lead designer and really the main guy who created the game. So his world is a bit different. Similar in many ways to for example, my world, which I have in my head. Both Botanicula and Machinarium are very popular and I would say extremely popular. I didn't expect it to be. The sales are great, so we are absolutely independent nowadays. We can continue doing what we like to do. And there's also completely new team which is working on yet unannounced game. Still in secret, so I don't want to talk about it because it's still in the very early stages of development.
Games designer Jakub Dvorsky, who was speaking to Jan Wellinger. That edition of The Arts was broadcast in September last year. If you've got any comments about today's program, please do share them with us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook or via Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.